And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, babe, what's going on?
Hey, I'll tell you what, Shane. There's a podcast out there picking SEC football games. I don't think there's two guys that could have done worse than the bowl pick'ems than we did.
We nailed it, man. Absolutely nailed it. I think I got some of these right. But boy, was I off in that Auburn game, man.
Yeah, so let's start, before we jump into the Auburn game, let's just go in order here. Let's okay. do a quick recap of the SEC bowl games that have already happened, starting with Baylor beating Vanderbilt 45-38. I believe we both picked Vanderbilt to win that one, and, I was surprised. Derek Mason's team allowed 45 points to damn Baylor. I didn't know a hell of a lot about Baylor, but I thought Vanderbilt would do a little bit better. I mean... Mm-hmm. My main takeaway from this one, Shane, Vanderbilt, as odd as this is to say, they just have an incredibly explosive offense, but when they weren't ripping off 70-yard rushes or screen passes that went for 80 yards, I mean, they weren't doing anything. So it was just either a huge play or nothing, and they couldn't tackle anyone in that damn game, and it ended up biting them in the ass. What were your thoughts on this, I believe it was this Thursday evening game here, Baylor taking down Vanderbilt?
Yeah, this one I was looking forward to because it opened up the SEC play, and I felt really good about that pick. I really did. Here's Keyshawn Vaughn, man, 250 yards rushing, and they can't win the game. You know what I'm saying? It's like the defense did not show up in this. It was big play after big play, not only just for Vanderbilt, but with Baylor. It was just, like you said, it was just gashers, and it was almost like who has the ball last, and it shouldn't have been that way. Mason didn't play this one right, brother.
Yeah, now you mentioned Keyshawn Vaughn. I believe he broke an SEC record, Shane. He averaged 18.7 yards per rush. Why in the hell someone averaging 18 yards per carry is only getting the ball 13 times? I'll never know. That's a question any Ludwig will probably have to live with all offseason. But how about this stat, Shane? I thought this was really interesting. This came from Chad Winthrow, who's a Nashville radio host. Derek Mason is coached for 5 seasons at Vanderbilt. He does not have a single winning season, but he's 3-2 against Tennessee. I mean, I don't know. It's just such a weird case, Shane, where he's really not getting it done per se consistently, but he's beating the damn main rival. How do you assess the job Mason's done? And do you think Vanderbilt fans should be happy with basically just beating Tennessee and winning a couple non-conference games every year?
I think they got to be happy with that because, I mean, this is Vanderbilt, Tennessee. You lose to Vandy too many times, you lose your job. We've seen this happen with Butch Jones and Derek Dooley. I mean, you drop the Vandy-Kentucky games in the past. I know Kentucky's doing good this year, but it usually comes back and haunts the UT coach. Now, on the flip side of the coin, beating a team like Tennessee or beating – you know, another big rivalry like that kind of keeps your job, and that's kind of what we're seeing here. So I don't think Vandy fans should be extremely thrilled about this season because I think, honestly, there was some serious potential on this team. I think Kyle was playing some of his best ball this year. I truly believe that Keyshawn Vaughn is one of the best, if not the best, running back they've had the last 10 years, and I know they had Webb down there forever. Mm-hmm. But I just love the way this guy runs. Of course, he was a little banged up. I don't know. I'm looking like they missed an opportunity where, like, Kentucky seized on theirs, and Vandy didn't.
Yeah, and how about this, Shane? Final thing I got on this one. Kyle Shermer, you mentioned him there. I believe he finishes his Vanderbilt career the leading mm-hmm. passer in yards and touchdowns in school history, and you still can't have a damn winning season. I mean, yeah. at any point during his career, That's got to be troubling. I mean, it is Vanderbilt. I mean, maybe the expectations are not that high, but hell, if you got a guy like that, you're still not winning. I'm not sure what that says about 2019 and moving forward.
Yeah, I'd be worried, man. I thought Mason would take one of these open spots, but it looks like he's going to stick around. So he's going to have to do something. He can't sit there at this, you know, 6-7 record every single year. I don't think that this AD is going to let that happen.
All right, Shane, let's go to the Music City Bowl. You teased it earlier. It's another one that we absolutely nailed. I had Purdue winning by 10. I think you had Purdue winning comfortably as well. And what happened, Shane? Auburn beat the shit out of them, 63-14. I mean, I think the first, I want to say, 7-8 possessions, Auburn scored a damn touchdown. They were up 56-7 at halftime. I mean, they could have picked their damn score in this one. What were your and I also buried Jarrett Stidham, said he, you know, he should sit this game out. He threw for 373, 5 touchdowns. I mean, he looked like damn All-American. This was the best game he's ever played in his life. Thoughts on Auburn's huge win over Purdue?
Honestly, I thought I would stop watching this game because it was a blowout and Purdue was just putting in their backups, you know. Mm-hmm. But I was totally wrong on this one. I mean, Gus put it to him, and like you said, it was every single drive. There was no punts. Every drive ended with a touchdown. I think the first time that it didn't was in the third quarter, you know. So I mean, this thing was out of hand early. It was 56-7 at half, and honestly, after that I stopped watching. So hell of a game, man. I mean, that was a statement game right there, saying, hey, you gonna fire me now, son? You know?
Well, Shane, I always caution people, you know, whether good or bad, to not read too much into these bowl games because they're just so weird. I mean, you're playing against non-traditional opponents, and, you know, obviously you got weeks to prepare, and then obviously following the bowl game, unless you're in the playoff, you've got a whole damn offseason. So I don't know if there's really carryover from it. I know the fans, you know, like we kind of saw, here's a perfect example, last offseason, or last bowl season, I should say, South Carolina upsets Michigan, South Carolina fans going wild, you know, huge expectations, and it didn't mean anything for this season. So, you know, I kind of caution people, I'm not trying to downplay Auburn's huge win because it was impressive, but I'm not totally sure that it means a whole lot moving forward. But I do want to ask you this, Shane. Was it as simple, do you think, with just Gus Malzahn taking over the play calling? I mean, this offense, they just look damn near unstoppable. Do you read more into that being Purdue's defense is terrible, or the switch to Gus Malzahn calling the plays and Jarrett Stidham, you know, having the best game, I think, of his career?
Hey, this may be more the team itself. I mean, they've been made fun of and put down for the last 3 weeks by myself included, you know. So this may be a more of a team effort, and doing this for the coach and the coach doing it for the players. It kind of felt like that, you know. I haven't, but for me to sit back and act like I know a lot about Purdue, I don't. I've only watched maybe 2 games. I remember the I think it was the Missouri game was a barn burner. Mm-hmm. And then I caught the tail end of the Ohio State game, you know, just because they were getting beat. So that's all of the Boilermakers that I have. But that was early in the season. I don't know what this team was toward the end of the season. So to say that this was more about Auburn being good or Purdue being bad, it's just not fair for me to say right now. You know what I'm saying?
No, I got you, Shane. But I don't know. If I'm an Auburn fan, I don't know how I feel about this because we see what they're capable of doing. They just didn't really do it consistently. Now, I do think we should give Auburn credit. Obviously, they didn't give up on the year. They had several opportunities to do so. And I think even in that Iron Bowl, I think we kind of noted that immediately after. That was one of the better games they had. But just damn Alabama, so damn good. They you know, won it big. But Auburn had a strong showing in that Iron Bowl, too. So maybe we should have seen that one coming.
Yeah, and it seems like kind of Auburn was on the upswing toward the end of the season. It just felt that way, like they were getting a little bit. And then, of course, you have to face Bama, and, you know, Bama makes everybody look bad, you know?
All right, Shane, going from the high of Auburn, let's jump to the damn lowest of lows here. South Carolina shut out in the Belk Bowl, 28-0 against Virginia. Another one I nailed. I think I had South Carolina winning this one by 30 points. They lost by 28. I mean, This was just a pathetic performance. I think this is the worst damn performance of the Will Muschamp era there in Columbia. I mean, Jake Bentley, 17 of 40 for 218 yards and two interceptions. Now, you know, they had a chance or two to kick field goals to kind of not get shut out, but that was late in the game. It wouldn't have really helped.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a weird thing to say they got shut out because they did. I think this is their first shutout since 2006. What are your thoughts on South Carolina no-showing here against a Virginia team that I didn't think was any good heading into this one?
Yeah, honestly, this one I got right. I picked South Carolina to lose this one. I didn't think it'd be by four touchdowns. I thought it'd be a closer game than that. But I don't know. I just didn't feel good about this team. Just, you know, ever since Debo decided to sit this one out, it just feels like there was a lot of steam lost toward the end of the season with these guys. So I just didn't feel good about it. It felt kind of, to me, it kind of felt like Auburn last year, just a total letdown season, and they weren't going to show up in the bowl game, you know?
Yeah, and I made this interesting comparison, Shane. I want to know if this makes sense to you. But, you know, obviously Arkansas had a really down year, 2-10, but they did score 31 points against Alabama. No one saw that coming. And then South Carolina, you know, obviously much better than Arkansas, but they, you know, they really moved the ball at will against Clemson, put up a ton of points. And I think a lot of people looked at that, myself included, and said, hell, this offense has turned the corner. But then they didn't do anything against Akron, really. They obviously got shut out here. Could you make that comparison that maybe, you know, this was just a wild one-off? I don't know what in the hell happened in that Clemson game that the South Carolina's offense went off. But do you think that's possibly just a one-off to where this offense maybe just not capable of doing that more than once?
Yeah, I mean, it felt like maybe the cards they were holding back, they showed them all during that game trying to make it competitive. And I mean, because one thing you could say about this game was there's absolutely no offense. I mean, Bentley couldn't get anything going. The receivers couldn't do anything. I think their leading rusher had 21 yards. So it's like anything they put on there. I mean, Virginia looked like a damn steel curtain out there.
Yeah. South Carolina had 43 rushing yards total. And that's something, Shane, we've seen time and time again with South Carolina this year. I mean, against Georgia, Florida. I mean, they can't move the ball on the ground when it matters against, you know, good competition. And I think that really hurts what South Carolina's trying to do in Will Muschamp's defense. I don't think they, you know, they're catering to their quarterback and receivers, which they should, but I just don't know if he's comfortable doing that with his defense, because it's not, you know, something we've hit on time and time again. It's not like the defense is that good, and they've been there for several years. They got plenty of young talent, but I just don't know if this is working out. Not to say, obviously, I don't think they should fire him or anything. I think he's done a solid job overall, but maybe just the expectations need to be reset a little bit there at South Carolina. And after the game, Shane, there are some people kind of calling for Jake Bentley's job. I mean, when the hell is this guy going to win a big game? He's going to be a senior next year.
Yeah.
Let's jump to Jake Bentley's comments after the game, and then we can discuss that.
I didn't think I played that well. Not well at all. Just, you know, interceptions especially. Those are tough. And then not executing down the red zone, that's always a tough thing to swallow too. So just got to be better. Just got to go back and work and to remember this feeling and how it felt. That was kind of Coach Muschamp's message. Just remember how this feeling feels and what we got to do to change it.
All right, Shane, I mean, it's almost like, you know, we made fun of Gus Malzahn earlier in the season for just the same shit he would say in the press conference. It seems like Jake Bentley, kind of the same deal, kind of says the same shit after disappointing loss after disappointing loss. South Carolina signed number two quarterback in the nation, Ryan Helinski, big time commit. I mean, he's like a borderline five-star quarterback. Any chance Helinski pushes Jake Bentley for the job next year, you think, in South Carolina?
I think so, man. I really do. I here's a hot take for you. Jake is not good. Okay. I mean, he came out like a world beater when he first started playing football up there. And, you know, his freshman year, they kept talking about how young he was, and South Carolina fans got excited about the future they had, and opposing teams feared what they had to face the next few years. But it just seems like he's not getting better. It's like, I don't know, like he's creating, I mean, it could be part to do with the coaching staff. It may be something to do with the play calling, but it just seems like he's putting a lot of pressure on himself and, like, I've got to win this game, not the team. You know what I'm saying? He has that gunslinger mentality, and that's what gets him in trouble. He had two picks and ended two drives. So, I don't know. I just don't think he's the guy, brother.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you. You said he's not that good. I would add he's good against Tennessee, it seems like.
Yeah.
That's the game he shows up for every year, as you well know. How about this, Shane? I don't know if you saw this after the game, but defensive back Rashard Fenton, according to Will Muschamp, he refused. Well, I don't know. He didn't really say refuse, but he said he decided not to go back in the game. You know, Will Muschamp said he didn't know what was up with that, but not a good sign. If you know, we've seen that with some Butch Jones players. We've seen that with Sapp, the linebacker from Tennessee this year, even, and Jeremy Pruitt. You know, sent him to the locker room.
Yeah,
like I said, maybe we don't read too much into these bowl games, but losing 28-0, you got players refusing to go in. There's not many SEC teams that needed the offseason more than South Carolina after that.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. And I don't know. This is what drives me nuts with people sitting out like Debo. I think it all started there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, hey, if this guy that's maybe a team captain or a team leader is not even going to play during the bowl game, then why the hell should I? I mean, it's Virginia. What is there to win?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're already here. I got the cool hotel, but I'm ready to go back home, you know? I don't know. It just feels like sometimes these bowl games, if it's not a big game, a playoff game or something like that, they just don't matter.
All right, Shane. So South Carolina obviously trending down. Let's go to a team trending up. Florida, huge win in the Peach Bowl. Actually, this is one we both got right. Thank God we know what we're talking about a little bit. Florida beat the hell out of Michigan 41-15. And, you know, Michigan had a few decent plays to start with, but after that, I mean, it was all Florida after that. And I tried to compliment the team on Twitter. I said, Felipe Franks, you know, I didn't even think he had that great of a game. He was overthrowing guys. He was underthrowing guys. I wasn't trying to diminish him, but my point being was the starting quarterback not even playing that well, and you're completely controlling a top 10 team.
Mm-hmm.
I think Florida, maybe outside of Alabama and Georgia, I think they were probably the hottest team in the SEC to close the season. And of course, Florida fans got mad when I made that comment. But what are your thoughts on this huge? I mean, the Gators just won 10 games, Shane, under Dan Mullen, who inherited a damn 4-win team.
Yeah. No, I thought they did awesome, man. I'm a Tennessee fan. I'm sitting back watching these guys. I'm like, damn, why can't we do that? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Come off a shitty season and then go up here and beat the brakes off Michigan that was supposed to be playing for a national championship. So, I mean, the thing that the Gators did, Franks did awesome. Okay. And honestly, if you're a Gator fan, you gotta think about the future here. You're a little excited seeing Dan's offense starting to really start kicking in gear toward the late season here, especially having a dual threat quarterback, because I think he had almost 100 yards rushing. But what I loved most about this game was that SEC defense. They shut down the Wolverines rushing game. They made this thing one dimensional, and Michigan just wasn't ready for it. Shea Patterson had flashbacks, brother.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of – it was almost the same deal as in that Ohio State game where Ohio State just carved up Michigan. I mean, Florida did the same thing. They didn't obviously do it through the air. They did it more through the ground. But, I mean, they just did what they wanted. I mean, Michigan even blocked a punt in this game. I mean, they had a few breaks go their way, and they still got destroyed. It's got to be, you know, one of the worst 10-win seasons in Michigan history. I mean, they were non-competitive in the bowl game against Ohio State. I don't know, just not a good year. And kind of like you hit on there with Debo and some of the South Carolina guys sitting out, that was obviously the case with Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have that, I don't know, it just seems like kind of like you were saying there, the other guys kind of buy into it, especially when things start going the wrong direction.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of a troubling sign.
And it's so hard with these bowl games because here you got Michigan that had high expectations all season long, potentially making a playoff spot if they could have got past Ohio State, and they didn't. So they dropped all these games toward the end. They get a little frustrated. And then you look at Florida, and they were the opposite, you know, kind of started out a little rough but picked up some steam toward the end. So I don't know. It's just you have one team that really wanted to be there, it felt like, and one team that didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, it showed.
And I thought, in the post game, Shane, in the locker room, the Florida Gators official Twitter account, they shared a video that I thought was pretty special, Shane. It was just one of the Florida players admitting that, hell, he thought about quitting the game of football after everything they went through under McElwain, and just his appreciation for Dan Mullen coming to Gainesville. So,
yeah,
let's play this video.
I'm proud of you guys.
Okay? Hey, cool. I got something to say.
Yeah.
Hey, I just want to say thank you, like, for me and all the seniors. Like, we just, like, it's so crazy because last December, I was thinking about quitting football. But when you came and they just explained, like, from you being here and you knowing the Gators standing and bringing it back, man, we just appreciate you for doing that for us, because if it weren't for you, we wouldn't be here today. And we appreciate you.
All right, Shane, for as goofy as old Dan Mullen is, there's no doubt he's one of the SEC's best coaches. He may be the best play caller, maybe in the nation. I mean, he does a hell of a job with play calling. Even if Florida can't recruit, I mean, they have a top 20 class, so we'll give him that. But regardless of that, I mean, clearly the Gators are on the rise with Dan Mullen there, wouldn't you think?
Well, I'll tell you, man, you keep coming out with videos like this, they'll start recruiting sooner than later. I mean, if you could see that you're going to be with a player's coach, somebody that, you know, you've seen these players come out and they really love their coaches. I mean, because that's where a lot of this recruiting happens from, is people on the staff, maybe some folks that are already that are getting recruited there. They just kind of feel that family vibe. So I think the recruits will come. And I don't know, man. I mean, like I said, 10-3, that's unbelievable. I never thought they'd be there at the end of the year.
And one final note, Shane, on Florida, Juwan Taylor, the junior right tackle, he announced he's going to leave school early for the NFL draft. Martez Ivey, the left tackle, is obviously a senior, as well as both guards, Fred Johnson, Tyler Jordan. So Florida's going to be replacing four of the five starting offensive linemen. That's something to keep a note on, you know, all off season, that in Dan Mullen's run first system, you know, obviously that's keyed up front. So that's something Florida's going to have to break. And they start the season against Miami, I believe. So that's not going to be an easy task to get out of the gate there.
Oh, that was some big news today too, Mike.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we can jump to that because old damn Mark Richt lost control of his job. He's retired. And from what I read, according to this was Bruce Feldman, the issue was Mark Richt's son. I think his name's John Richt. He's the quarterback coach.
Yeah.
Miami basically said, you have to fire him. And instead of firing him, Mark Richt retired.
Oh, shit. Man. Well, he loves family, brother. You know what I'm saying? Now, did he keep his job? Or, I mean, how did that work out?
No, I'm sure whenever they hire a new coach, he'll be able to bring on whoever he wants. But,
yeah,
so that's interesting, Shane. I mean, I did not really see Mark Richt leaving. Or, I mean, immediately. You know what I mean? I mean, I didn't either. Things
I
did kind of fall apart. But, hell, I thought he was doing a decent job.
Yeah, it felt like there was a little bit of a buzz. They did get some good recruits down there, and, you know, they did lose out on a few here toward the end, but I don't know. I'm like you. I thought things were going in the right direction, but, I mean, why would you want to work for anybody that wants you to dictate who you have on your staff, though? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Even if it's my son or not, you know, I don't want somebody coming up and saying, hey, you got to get rid of that coach, you know? Like, no, you hired me to be the head coach. I'm the captain now. I control this. And if you feel like you're being managed, micromanaged, then maybe he's old enough. He's ready to get out of here.
Now, how about this, Shane? I don't know if you saw this, but according to, I think this was some in the Kentucky media, but they've noted that Mark Stoops will likely be on Miami's short list to replace Mark Richt. What are your thoughts on Kentucky's breakout coach, SEC Coach of the Year, potentially being a candidate there at the Miami job.
That's a big one, man. I mean, that's he's got a pretty sweet deal there in Kentucky with his contract, and but maybe he's looking at the cupboards there and saying, hey, I better go now if I'm going to go. So, not saying that Kentucky's going to be bad next year, but I mean, history shows that Miami's been better than Kentucky in years past. So,
yeah,
man, all our dogs are going crazy. What the hell's going on out here?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, Shane, because the more I think about it, obviously, Mark Stoops got the security at Kentucky. He's got one of the best deals, if not the best deal in college football. He gets an automatic extension by winning 7 games, automatic 2-year extension by winning 10. He's already paid, I think he's like the number 22 or 23 highest paid coach in the nation.
Yeah.
And Miami, from what I've always been told, they're not a rich school. So it's not like they're going to give him some mega deal. I don't even know if he'd get a raise.
No,
on the flip side, Shane, you got to look at it like this. ACC, not exactly a great conference right now. So, I mean, you got Clemson, obviously, but Florida State's down. Basically, all the other teams are down. Miami, that whole area, that's one of the best recruiting areas in the nation. I mean, if they just keep the local kids there, they'll be competitive in the ACC for year in and year out. I mean, there's positives and minuses for either side if you want to look at it for a guy like Mark Stoops.
It seems like Miami would be a great place for that coach that's looking for the next job, you know. And I think Kentucky to Miami, maybe not a lateral move, but it's not that big. Like you said, he's getting paid a shit ton of money now. You know, he's already having trouble getting people to watch the games in Kentucky. Ain't nobody showing up to the games in Miami. So, I don't know. It doesn't feel like that would – this Miami job feels like one for maybe that tier below, somebody that's not playing on a New Year's game. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane. So, let's get back to a little bit of our recaps here. We'll start briefly because we don't give a shit about Notre Dame, but we got to talk about the semifinals here. Clemson beat the hell out of Notre Dame 30-3. Could have been a lot worse. I mean, it was close for a quarter, Shane. that's about what Notre Dame's about, a quarter of an elite team, as I like to think. So that made a little bit of sense there. But what was your takeaway from, you know, Clemson just picking apart Notre Dame?
That Notre Dame should never be in a playoff ever again unless they're in a conference, period.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just something. Somebody put out, did you see that stat showing the last 6 games that they played on New Year's Day or, a big bowl game?
Yeah, I believe the stat you're referring, Shane, is playoff or BCS appearances by Notre Dame. Every single time, their margin of losing was 24.8 or something like that. So they're getting blown out every damn time they're in one of these marquee games. And, you know, I'm not a big believer in, you know, what happened 10, 15 years ago. That means nothing for this year. But when it's every damn time, I mean, it's kind of hard to look at that and not, kind of like you're saying, I mean, they're not really being tested like everybody else. And I thought the best example was from Peter Burns, Shane. So he asked, you know, if a team like BYU went undefeated, would they be in the damn playoff?
Right.
No, hell no, they wouldn't. Notre Dame's is the same deal, but they're getting in because they're Notre Dame. I mean, it's they're not really facing a tough. They are facing Power Five schools, but I mean, one or two of them was any good this year. So I don't know. It's just the perception is what's getting them in.
Yeah, and two, you're trying to figure out who's going to be good 10 years from now. So when you're making these schedules, like for example, this Notre Dame schedule, when they, and I'm pretty sure it was 2013 when they scheduled Florida State, but that was the year they came off Florida State, won the national championship. So, I mean, at that point, yes, it looked like a great game, but then they play them this year and FSU doesn't make a bowl. So, but if you're in a conference, you know, there's going to be 6 teams that do really well and there's going to be 6 teams that don't, but you're going to play half of them. So it just seems like it kind of weeds out those, guessing game, trying to figure out who's going to be good 10, 15 years from now. Because if you look at Notre Dame's schedule, they've got games scheduled right now till 2035. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, there's no way that you could tell me that this team's going to be good or bad in 20 years.
Well, Shane, you know who Notre Dame plays next year, don't you?
Is it Bama? I know Bama's coming up.
No, they got Bama, like you said, in about 25 years. They got that Bama game coming up. But next year they travel to Athens. They're going to play Georgia. So
that's right. Yeah,
they'll probably lose by about 45, and we won't have to hear about them making in the playoffs. You know. All right, Shane.
I had a bucket list, Mike. I had a bucket list. UCF is number one. Notre Dame was number two, so that one's checked. And then, of course, Penn State coming up. So that's my list. I want those three to lose.
Okay, Shay, the other semifinal game, Alabama, Oklahoma. Bama wins 45-34. This looked like a damn blowout. I mean, it was 28-0 to start with. And then Oklahoma, you know, I did see an Oklahoma fan. They tweeted out something like, "If you take out the first quarter, we outscored Alabama." Like, what the hell does that mean? I mean, that's right up there with UCF claiming a championship. So Sooners may have a banner to hang here soon. But, you know, credit the Sooners for not giving up. They looked pretty good there, you know, through the second half and a little bit in the second mm-hmm. quarter. I think that had a lot more to do with the fact that, as Nick Saban pointed out, Crimson Tide kept having stupid penalties and kind of shooting themselves in the foot, and, you know, drives were ending and field goals that should have been touchdowns and things of that nature. So I think it was more Alabama not getting it done in the second half more than Oklahoma's doing. But what was your main takeaway from Alabama's big win?
Well, there was a lot of fight in that Oklahoma team, man, because like you said, they jumped on them early. It was 28-0 mm-hmm. first, you know, right there in the, I think it's second quarter, something like that, is when they got up 28-0. But after that, you know, they just kept chipping away. And there was a few times they got within two scores and, you know, thought like they were going to make this a ball game. But I don't know. Credit to the defense. There was a couple plays during that game that they really stepped up and held Oklahoma and didn't make this a ball game. I think Bama's defense kept them in this for sure.
How about Tua's stat line, Shane? 24 of 27, 318 yards, four touchdowns. I'm obviously not a huge Alabama homer by any means, but I still find it idiotic that he didn't win the Heisman. I mean, I don't know if we've ever seen a quarterback, we certainly haven't at Alabama, play at this level. And he did this every damn game. He didn't even have to play the fourth quarter. I mean, we're seeing a guy on another level, and that's nothing to – I mean, this was one of the few games I saw Kyler Murray. I think he lived up to the hype, but I just think it's idiotic to say that he's better than Tua. I mean, he's clearly a notch below, I would think.
When you have more touchdowns than you do incompletions during the game, yeah, that was a hell of a ball game, you know. I did like – honestly, this is probably the first time start to finish I ever watched Kyler Murray. Mm-hmm. And, he, like you said, he lived up to the tab, though. I mean, he had himself over 300 yards and over 100 yards rushing. So he is that offense. You take him out, mm-hmm. they have nothing. And Oklahoma's not even they may not even make a bowl game. I don't know. I don't know who their backup is. But it just felt like – I don't know. Do you think – he deserved the Heisman after just this game? I know me and you are kind of really high on Tua, but after this game, did it persuade you any that Kyler is a true Heisman winner?
Well, the only way I could see it, because you did hit a perfect point there, Shane. What is Oklahoma without him? Mm-hmm. I mean, they just won the Big 12. They only lost one game, and it was to Texas, and then they turned around and beat them in the title game. So you could say they beat everyone on their schedule, basically.
Yeah.
Until Alabama, obviously. But, yeah, if you want to look at it like most valuable or most important, certainly I could see voting for Kyler. But I don't know what you're supposed to vote for. I thought it was just supposed to be like who's the clear best player.
Yeah,
and
that's
true. We're looking at Tua. I don't know. I don't even know if he can do this next year, because this was just like the greatest season I've ever seen from a guy that is not – Cam Newton, Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel runner. This was like the best passing season I think I've ever seen in college football.
Yeah, that's true. And to penalize Tua because he does have weapons and and maybe, you know, what's his name, doesn't. I don't think that's fair either. You make some good points there.
Yeah, no, and it, I mean, he was overwhelming favorite, and then he got hurt, and then he just lost it. Like, I don't understand that, but maybe let's not belabor that point. It's already happened. But
I did like the ankle diagram at the beginning of the game. Did you see that? Yeah. Like, okay, so now it makes sense. Now I know why he's limping.
So, Shay, the lopsided nature of that Notre Dame game and Oklahoma getting blown out a little bit there, had a ton of people on Saturday night, you know, questioning whether Georgia should have been in the playoff. You know, I think we were both on record saying Georgia, clearly one of the top four teams. Not sure that's what the committee's criteria is. And mm-hmm. Georgia had some media availability on Sunday after the game. Let's play this clip. This is Jonathan Ledbetter. He was the most outgoing comment here. They interviewed several of the Georgia players. He was really the only one that was willing to bite, but I thought his comments were interesting.
Like I just said, we're a top four team in the country. And I mean, I think everyone knows that. You know, it's a little controversy, you know, with the playoffs and, you know, if they would have put us in there, and I understand that. But at the end of the day, they know it. And we do too.
All right, Shane, so do you agree there? I mean, clearly I do. Jonathan Ledbetter says they're one of the best four. I think that, you know, that should have been good enough to get them in. If it would have been Georgia playing Clemson, I think it would have been far more competitive. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, if you're asking me who the best four teams in the country are, they weren't in the playoffs. That's fair to say. But, you know, then on the flip side of the coin, Georgia had opportunities and blew it. They had not one but two shots to make it into this playoff. If they would have beat LSU, wouldn't be a question. They'd still be in there. If they would have beat Bama, they would be in there. So they had two opportunities there, and they dropped it. They dropped the big game. So I can see, you know, both sides of that coin. But if I'm in the committee and my job is to pick the four best teams in the country, then there's no question Georgia should have been in there.
Well, let me ask you
but
this.
But could you imagine, though, if they did and they left Notre Dame out? I mean, and then Notre Dame goes up to win their ball game, and then we'd be saying, oh, my God, it's the greatest team ever, and they didn't get to play, you know? Mm-hmm. What do they have to do?
Well, Shane, I'll tell you what. While all these people, you know, there were several Georgia players. I counted, I don't know, 6 to 8. There may have been even more, just that were kind of laughing at the results and noting how the four best didn't get in. I don't know who this was. I wish I would give them credit, but it was just like an account I was unfamiliar with. But they tweeted out, if Georgia had shown up in Baton Rouge like they are on Twitter tonight, they'd be in this thing. So that was the best tweet of the night on Saturday, I thought.
Oh, that's true, man. It is true. I feel bad for them. I mean, because I thought they had a great team this year. And, God, they'd love to have a few plays back in that Bama game, I'm sure.
All right, Shane, let's do a quick look ahead to Alabama-Clemson national championship game. That's going to be on Monday, January 7th.
Okay.
What do you predict? I'm throwing a little curveball at you here. Who would you favor in that game? What do you think the spread is there?
Oh, Bama, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give them eight and a half.
Ooh, you're close, Shane. Alabama, 6. It debuted at 7, and now it's down to some 6 in some books, 6.5. So Alabama's a slight under a touchdown favorite over Clemson. This is obviously the fourth year in a row they've met in the playoff. The over-under, 59.5, so relatively high. I think they're going to be they anticipate some scoring here. Thoughts on that line? Thoughts on that over and under?
They may be right, man. I tell you, it's funny because you're talking about over and unders. I was like, there's no way this Oklahoma. I just did not see the Oklahoma game getting up to 80 points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's what it came. I think that's what it was, if I'm not mistaken. A lot of words for I can't. I'm not going to argue with Vegas. I don't know how they do it, but it's amazing how close these games are usually.
Yeah, so right there. And we got to keep in mind, Shane, remember last year it was CFB Matrix who I think he got the damn score of the Alabama-Georgia game exactly right. heading up to that one. So everyone be on the lookout for that.
Real quick, you talked to him. What was his prediction for this year? Is he close?
The top of my head, I couldn't tell you.
Oh, okay. Ain't that good of buddies, are you? He must not be doing too good, or we would have heard a lot more about it on Twitter.
All right, Shade, before we get into, obviously we got a couple more SEC bowl games coming up here. I wanted to get your thoughts on this, Shane. There's been quite a bit of, quite a bit of rumblings here for the Tennessee offensive coordinator search. This has got to be the longest offensive coordinator search in the history of offensive coordinator searches. But according to the Oklahoma State 24/7 site, they are reporting that Mike Yurichich, the Oklahoma State offensive coordinator, has been offered the job there at Tennessee. Oklahoma State plays Missouri on Monday, so the speculation there is obviously he's going to finish out the game, and then I don't know when it would be, but I guess it would be following that, maybe a decision will be made. What are your thoughts on all that?
Sure. You know, I made a video about all the candidates we've had on the short list today, and I think I went through 20 of them. And after the video, I realized I didn't include 10 more, you know? So it's just like, we've had tons of shortlist out, so I don't want to get my hopes up, but I will say I will be keeping an eye on this Missouri game just to kind of see. But the thing is, and I know you've been talking about this today on Twitter, is I'm getting mixed things. I'm getting like, oh, this would be a great hire, and then there's some saying Oklahoma State can't wait to get rid of this guy, you know? So what are your thoughts on him?
Well, from what I understand, Shane, I think of the guys that I have heard they've interviewed, he has been the best one that can explain his offense, and not just obviously being an offensive coordinator, but he can break down every player's responsibility from quarterback to receiver to offensive line to tight end, obviously on and on and on. And some of the other guys couldn't. I was told Kendall Briles, he couldn't explain anything. It's all hand signals and there's no plays. That's why you don't see many of his players go on to success in the NFL, in my opinion, because they have to teach him everything. Whereas this guy is kind of the flip side. I mean, he can coach any position, and that's kind of what we've heard Jeremy Pruitt that he likes of his staff. So I think he's been most impressed with this guy, just based on what I've been told, where he can communicate what he wants, because obviously Jeremy Pruitt, very tied to Will Friend, his offensive line coach. They're clearly not going to get rid of a guy like Brian Niedermeyer. I think they've been very happy with David Johnson, the receivers coach. So they're not looking to blow up the offensive staff. They're looking to bring in a guy that can kind of work with the guys they got. Maybe Chris Winkie moving to quarterback coach or something. I don't know the specifics there, but that's been mentioned. So I think that's why Yurichich makes a lot of sense. I know he coached at a lower level and was tremendously successful. Then he came to Oklahoma State, and they've been very solid. I think I don't know if he's much of a recruiter, but I don't know how much is that Oklahoma State and how much of that is maybe Mike Gundy. I don't know because I don't know the specifics there at Oklahoma State, but I wouldn't think it would be a bad hire. This is a guy that is being thrown around with a lot of jobs, but I also wonder, kind of like with Hugh Freeze there, when you start hearing this guy is a candidate at this school and that school and this school and that school, is that the agent putting his name out there? I mean, that's kind of what it says to me, looking for pay upgrades. This guy, he made $800,000 last year, so... I mean, that's quite a bit of money for an offensive coordinator.
That's probably what the head coach did, too. You know, Gundy came out saying he may be interested in another job. So, this may be just a page out of the coach's book, you know. I tell you, I'm kind of a fan of this Freddie Kitchens. I've done a lot of research today on these coaches, and he was actually the one that I enjoyed listening and talking to. He seems like a good guy, buddy. You know, just he ain't Freddie Kitchens from Bama. He ain't a quarterback anymore. He's put on about 100 pounds, but looks like he's one of those guys you'd like to sit there and hang out with, you know?
Well, Shane, I'll tell you, just between you and I, then. Yeah. I don't know if there's anyone's out there listening, but I've been told Freddie Kitchens is unhireable at the collegiate level. So I don't really know. I wasn't really told more specifics than that, but I was told that he and Jeremy Pruitt are basically, you know, very good friends that go way back. That's kind of why it seemed like a natural hire to me. But yeah. I was told basically they can't touch him. So I do not look for it to be Freddie Kitchens. One other note, Shay, that I, you know, this is something that I was tipped off to the other day. I thought you and the listeners would like to know this. There's some speculation that it could be Chip Long, the Notre Dame offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And I looked into him a little bit. You know, this was his first year at Notre Dame. They were wildly successful. They had to switch quarterbacks midseason, and you know, credit the offensive coordinator for managing that and taking off after that. But prior to that, he was at Memphis, where they were awesome there. And that means he would have worked with David Johnson, the Tennessee's current wide receivers coach, and he's an Alabama native who played at like North Alabama or something. So I would imagine he's got some knowledge or run-ins there with Jeremy Pruitt, and a lot of his staff have Alabama ties. What would you think of Chip Long coming to Tennessee?
Well, honestly, probably now's not the best time to ask me for a Notre Dame offensive coach, because that game was horrible against Clemson. So I want no part of that 3-30 score. And who knows? Maybe he didn't have the talent. Clemson did have a great defense, so I'm kind of at that point where I'm just really wanting him to hire somebody just so we can stop talking about it and get it behind us. What about Steve Sarkisian? You don't think he's an option?
I don't think he is. I understand why there's a connection there, why people think that may be the guy, but I don't really think so. I don't think he would be even interested in coming to Tennessee, and I don't think that Jeremy Pruitt would offer him the job. I really don't.
Okay. All right. Well, out of that, who do you think is going to be?
probably Juracic. That's probably probably the guy. And we may only have to wait a day or two to find out.
Okay. Cool.
All right, Shane. So we've been rambling on here quite a bit, but we got a few SEC games left in the bowl season, and these are all going to be taking place Monday and Tuesday. So this will be the only time we'll have to discuss these. So let's jump into some New Year's Eve and New Year's Day games, should we?
Yeah, buddy. Let's do it.
Gambling? Who said anything about gambling? It's not gambling when you know you're going to win.
You know, that was my lock. I said to go with Texas A&M. I was right there.
They're going to beat the brakes off Miami. You watch it.
Any chance you think Missouri beats Georgia this year?
Not a chance in hell, man. Not a chance.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for us.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
All right, Shane, we teased it earlier. Let's start with the game that's going to be occurring first here. Missouri versus Oklahoma State in the Liberty Bowl. Missouri is a 9-point favorite. Who do you like in this one?
I like them Mizzou's. I tell you what, man. I think this is going to be an exciting game. It's probably going to be the most exciting game that you're going to see the rest of the season right here. I think if you like offense, if you don't like offense, then, you know, don't watch it. But I think this is going to be a high-scoring game. What was the over on this one? Do you know?
The over-under is 74.
74. I love it. Okay, Mike. So what I've got is Mizzou winning this thing 49. And then I've got Oklahoma State 31.
Well, Shane, I'm feeling much of the same. But going off our bowl picks, this probably means Oklahoma State is going to win. Because I'm also picking Missouri. I just think they're one of the hotter teams. They got a lot of momentum. They keep getting these damn quarterback transfers. I think what that says more than anything is just everyone is just completely bought in down there for whatever reason. Derek Dooley's done a great job. Drew Locke's final game. We keep talking about these guys sitting out the games. I think Drew Locke sitting out would have, you know, I wouldn't have held it against him. It would have made some sense. But he's playing. He's playing for his team. He's playing for his state. He's a Missouri native. I like Missouri to win, but I like Oklahoma State to cover, Shane. So I'm going Missouri 38, Oklahoma State 35. So I think it's going to be a close one. And I'm actually going, that'll be right there on the over-under. So, yeah, this is going to be a really good game. I agree with you. This is probably the bowl game I'm most looking forward to involving SEC teams on Monday.
Absolutely.
All right, Shane, how about this one? Jumping to the Gator Bowl, Texas A&M's a 7-point favorite against NC State. Who do you like in this one?
This one here, I don't think this is going to be much of a game either. I may be totally wrong, but it just feels like this is going to be a blowout. So I've got Texas A&M winning. I've got them winning 38, North Carolina State 21.
Ooh. Well, Shane, once again, I'm picking A&M, as with are you. So that means NC State is going to win. I've got A&M a little bit closer, though. I like NC State to cover. I think NC State's a pretty solid squad. I don't think they get the credit they deserve. But A&M 23, NC State 21. That's my score prediction. So I think it's going to be a relatively close one. And how about this, Shane? Travion Williams, I didn't know this until Sunday, but he is only 169 yards away from becoming A&M's all-time leading rusher for a single season. He enters the game with 1,524 yards, so that's pretty awesome. And you know,
he breaks that record, brother.
His linemen talking about how bad they want to get that for him. He said he wanted it, but he also said it was obviously more important that they get the win. They haven't won a bowl game, Shane, in 4 years. They're 0-3, their last three. So this could be really start of something. You know, we hit on the fact that Jimbo Fisher needed to close strong and kind of just end those dreadful streaks there for A&M in November. Mm-hmm. He more or less did that. If he wins this bowl game, I keep harping on it, but I think 2019 could be a huge year for A&M, and I think it's got to start here with this bowl game.
Okay, I like it.
All right, Shane, the Outback Bowl. This is going to be on New Year's Day, so this will be on Tuesday. Mississippi State is a 7-point favorite against Iowa. Who do you like in this one?
Did you say a 7-point favorite?
7 points is where I have it, yeah.
All right. I got Mississippi State 7-0. No, just yet. It just feels like it's going to be a low scoring game. I do have Mississippi State winning this thing, and honestly, the score is not much different. I got Mississippi State winning 21, Iowa 10. I just think it's going to be. What's the over under on this one?
I think this is the lowest one of the damn bowl season. Let's see. The over under, it's at 42, Shane. So betting that under has got to be one of the favorites. I'm going Mississippi State, Shane, 17, Iowa 10. So I'm going way under. I mean, these are just two solid defenses. They like to ground it out. I mean, Mississippi State and Iowa, they're not going to throw all over these teams unless, you know, some of these damn bowl games just do not go the way you're expecting it. So maybe that happens, but I don't know. Mississippi State's got so many players that are leaving. It's hard to imagine them just dropping a damn egg in their last game. Kind of like we've hit on the entire podcast, you know, guys sitting out the game. Jeffrey Simmons, he's announced, you know, he's headed to the NFL, but he is going to play in the game. You know, I think that's the mentality. Certainly don't have any issue with guys leaving pro when they can. And I like the fact that he got that out of the way, let fans know, hey, this is the last chance to see me play, and I'm playing with my brother. So I like that that momentum to carry over to this game. Mississippi State closed the season really strong with that. I mean, they just destroyed Ole Miss in the Egg Bowl. I look for the defense to do much the same here against Iowa.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Shane, this one I know you've been waiting for. LSU, 7.5-point favorite over UCF in the Fiesta Bowl. Who do you like in this one?
Better take the over, Mike. It's my $100. That's how much I care about this game. I'm putting it on all on LSU here. I think they come out. I don't know. Just, you know, it's like the opposite of South Carolina. The vibe, you know, you're hearing these players talk. They're having a good time. They know it's on the line. Yeah, Greedy sitting out, but the others aren't. They're there to play, and they're going to – I'm telling you, man, Coach O better be down there telling them UCF's claiming the national champ. They ain't lost a game in 5 years, and this is the year. I've got LSU winning 38. I got UCF 14.
Damn, Shane. So
blowout. Blowout, Mike.
I don't know if LSU can score that damn much. I don't know. Outside of anyone over other than Ole Miss. So
the defense is going to have a couple scores, Mike.
Yeah, but here's one, Shane, where you may be overlooking it. I've changed my tune on this one, Shane. Greedy Williams sitting it out. They got Christian Fulton. He's injured. They got another defensive back out. One of their defensive linemen sitting it out. I mean, what do we keep saying it? I know Devin White is playing. It's just weird to see all these other guys sitting it out of the damn Fiesta Bowl. That it's very bizarre to me because, like you said, there's a lot riding on this game. UCF won 25 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to forgive me on this one, Shane. I'm going UCF 27, LSU 24. I don't think the Tigers have enough offense here to get it done. And I think we're going to have to hear another damn offseason of UCF national championship back-to-back for UCF.
And we better hear the LSU fight song come Monday, son. You're wrong.
All right, how about this one, Shane? The Citrus Bowl, Kentucky, yeah. Penn State. Penn State's a 6.5-point favorite. Who do you like in this one?
Well, Mike, you know one thing. I'm always right about the Kentucky game. And so I think on this one, and I hate to do this to you, Wildcat fans, but I've got Penn State winning this thing, which you may be thanking me later. Penn State winning 21, Kentucky 14.
Ooh. Well, Shane, I think you did the right thing there because I got Kentucky winning, and you don't know how to pick Kentucky games, so I'm going with Wildcats 21, Penn State 20. I just think it'll mean so much to this damn team. You got guys like Benny Snell, Josh Allen. They're suiting up for this game, their last game as a Kentucky Wildcats before they go to the NFL. We've hit on it before. If Kentucky wins, they'll be only the third team in school history to win 10 games. And, you know, it's interesting because they say these things, all these crazy marks don't mean anything, but then they mm-hmm. bring them up all the time and the chip on their shoulder. I mean, this is just another chip, Shane. And Penn State, we've seen slow-ass Big Ten. Yes, Kentucky, maybe not the most skilled team on the outside of the perimeter, but they mm-hmm. do have a hell of a defense. They've got Lynn Bowden. I mean, as long as Terry Wilson doesn't have a complete meltdown in this game, I don't see any way Kentucky loses it. So this is one of my favorite ones, Kentucky being an underdog. I think they get it done in the end, and they beat a slow-ass Big Ten team, Penn State.
Have you heard about any Penn State sitting out?
I don't think they have NFL players to sit out, Shane.
Yeah, good. Good answer, Mike. Go to hell, Penn State.
All right, Shane, last one here. This is the biggest spread we got. Georgia, 12.5-point favorite versus Texas in the Sugar mm-hmm. Bowl. Who do you like in this one?
I feel bad for Texas, Mike. I do. I really do. I think the fact that Notre Dame got smoked just add fuel to this fire. And I think the Bulldogs come out, and they're going to come out humming. So I got another blowout, Mike. Mm. I've got Georgia winning this thing, 42, Texas 14. I mean, not even close. Not even close, Mike.
Well, Shane, I'm not.
They got to prove it. They're going to prove that they are the top four team in the nation. Even though it's too late, this is a signature win for them.
I'm not trying to burn any bridges here with our Georgia faithful fans. I know we got plenty of them out there, but I'm going the other way, Shane. Texas 33, Georgia 20. And I'll tell you why, Shane, because what have we seen, and this is nothing really against Georgia, but we've seen it time and time again here the last couple of years. When a team is in position to play for the college football playoff, and maybe should. I mean, we've hit on that. They should be in the college football playoff. They weren't in it. It's just when you lose that, Shane, it's almost like this Georgia team knows that they're national championship contenders. That this is what they've mm-hmm. been playing for the whole year. And now they go to one of these damn consolation games. And we saw it last year with Auburn. I mean, they just came out flat after losing. We saw, how about Alabama, Shane, losing to Utah? Remember that a couple years ago?
Yeah.
We saw Alabama lose to Oklahoma after the kick six. When these elite teams have to play in a, basically these consolation games that are outside of the playoff, that's when we see these big upsets. And we're seeing guys like DeAndre Baker, their outstanding corner. You know, he committed to playing, but then he's not playing because he's probably going to be a top 10 pick. So the same theme we keep hitting on, these elite players sitting out, it's never a good sign. I think Texas is the team that kind of comes into this with a lot to prove. And you kind of hit on it. I mean, Georgia players, they were kind of pissed off on social media, but How much of that translate to the game? How much is in their mind? Are they just thinking, hell, that should be us in the playoff? Now we're playing in this damn game that means nothing. I don't know, Shane. For the SEC's sake, I hate Texas. So I hope Georgia beats the hell out of them. But I just think this will be the one where there's always an SEC team that drops a game, and then you got all these idiots around the nation saying the SEC is overrated. You know, we saw it last year with UCF. I mean, this seems like an annual thing where the SEC gets upset and then it's all of a sudden SEC is overrated. I think this will be the one. This will be the marquee SEC is overrated, even though if these two teams, I agree with you, if this was, let's say, in any point in the regular season, I think Georgia would beat the shit out of Texas. But
yeah,
I just don't think Georgia's going to be very motivated to play in this game when you got Alabama marching their way to another national championship, it looks like.
I don't think Texas is that good. I mean, even if a bad Georgia team shows up, I mean, you're talking about a Texas team that hasn't beat anybody by more than a touchdown, and they've played some shitty teams, Mike. You know, I mean, maybe they have more than a touchdown. I know that was kind of an exaggeration, but I mean, some of these teams that they lost to, 6-6, Oklahoma State, they barely beat 5-7, Texas Tech. I mean, it's just 3-9 Kansas. They won by a touchdown. So I'm looking at this resume coming in here, and I don't care if it's the B team. I just don't see Texas making this a ball game. You talk about losing some luster. I mean, after that Oklahoma game, man, these guys can't be pumped up to play Georgia.
No, I mean, I don't know. I don't know, Shane. We'll see. Like I said, I just think Texas got more to prove here. But I hope I'm wrong, but I don't know. I'm going with it. Bowl season's crazy, Shane.
Texas can go to hell, Mike. I hate Texas.
All right, Shay, that's all I got on this one. You got anything before we jump off here?
Yeah, buddy. One thing I don't hate is listeners. I appreciate all y'all hanging out with us here toward the end. I did want to jump on real quick before I do the reviews. Capital One Bowl Mania. That's something that we've been doing with the group. Of course, remember, first place will get a prize. Last place will get a prize. I wanted to read the top three here. And this guy, I tell you, WGAS is running away with it. Came up with a 98.2% right now, sitting at 403 total points. First place, Taj 3 is second at 334, and Bayou Bink is at 326. Now, the bottom three, let's go down here to the bottom. Big Red and Black hasn't been at the bottom three, but has lately, you know, so made some bad picks here toward the end. So he's sitting down there, or she, at 198. Sleepy Joe, my brother's 1 point better at 199. And Bucket 72, our buddy Russ, at 203. So he's sitting, I mean, it's anybody's ball game. I don't want to tell you, Mike, but guess who's number four spot from the bottom?
Sounds like me, huh?
That's you, buddy. Cousin Shane's making a move toward the end. Of course, I used all my big points on these last games because SEC is the only ones I kind of know anything about. So, and that's barely. But, again, I appreciate everybody hanging out with us. We'll be updating that Wednesday on the Wednesday show. I did want to do a review, Mike, if you got the sound clip for it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Do it. This one comes from our boy, IVI. Let's try that again. This one comes from, I'm guessing, 4Like55. It's IVLIKE55. Cool name on Friday. Says 5 stars. Sorry, you Tennessee homers. Keep them coming. Roll Tide. So I appreciate that, Ike. I appreciate everybody hanging out with us. And You know, if you have an iPhone or iTunes account, we do appreciate you taking that step further to give us a rating or review on iTunes. If not, man, it's December and you're still hanging out with us. Actually, January almost, Mike.
Yes, sir. Hey, Shane, breaking news here. Before we jump off, I can get your thoughts on this.
Yeah.
Former Arizona head coach, obviously West Virginia and Michigan coach as well, Rich Rodriguez, expected to become the new offensive coordinator at Ole Miss. So Matt Luke kind of surrounding himself with former head coaches. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I know it's a splashy hire. Is it a good hire to hire one of these retread guys that obviously Rich Rodriguez knows what he's doing? Also, former Alabama head coach Shane. I don't know if you know that. He took the job for a couple hours and then he reneged. So Ole Miss getting quite an accomplished guy here to be offensive coordinator.
I like it, man. I do. I like surrounding yourself around people you've heard of. That's got that name, you know. So I think this can't hurt Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. You got to be careful hiring head coaches, though, you know, because one of them could be your replacement, Mike, you know, if they got some experience. So that's the only downside. But I think Rich he's kind of burned out that for a while. So I think he's going to be a coordinator. And I think it's a good hire, man. What about you?
Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of my thought. I kind of teased it there, but I just don't know if hiring these retread guys, I understand why fans don't get excited by the young guy that they never heard of, but mm-hmm. a lot more time. I mean, you got guys like Lincoln Riley. I mean, outside of ECU, nobody knew who he was when Oklahoma hired him. Now he's the big thing. You know, nobody in Oregon heard of Chip Kelly. When he got hired, he was a big thing. I just think for a school like Ole Miss, I think you got to try to hire the next big thing instead of these retread coaches. And you also hit on it, Shane, because I think Ole Miss is going to be really bad next year. They got to hire, you know, former head coach to be offensive coordinator in Rich Rodriguez, former head coach Mike McIntyre to be defensive coordinator. So question to you, Shane, final question before we jump off here.
Yeah.
Who will be the interim Ole Miss head coach next year, Rich Rodriguez or Mike McIntyre?
It's going to be Rodriguez, man. I think it is. And bigger question here, Mike, do you wish Rich would have kept that Alabama job? Because Lord knows I do.
Yes, Alabama would not be on their, what would it be, damn, sixth national championship on a Rich Rodriguez.
28th national championship, yeah. Save it. Oh, man, that's enough of that.
All right, Shane, thanks for joining me. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right, see you guys. Go Vols.